Hey everyone, and welcome back for another deep dive. Today we're going to be doing something a little different.
Ooh, I like different.
Yeah, this one's going to be pretty cool, I think.
All right, I'm intrigued. Lay it on me.
Okay, so instead of looking at like a specific event or person,
right,
we're going to be looking at the Frisian landscape.
The landscape, like the actual hills and valleys and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. So we're going to be using the land itself to uncover the history of the people who live there.
You mean like those long straight lines you see when you're flying over Friesland?
Yes. Those lines and like the way the land is divided up into these different patterns.
Mm-hmm.
All of that tells a story about the people who came before us.
So it's like a secret message written not in words, but in the very shape of the land itself.
Exactly. And our guidebook for this journey is a fascinating article from the Bridges and Passages Journal called Lines and Patterns in the Frisian Landscape.
Sounds like a pretty in-depth guidebook.
It is.
Yeah.
And we're going to be diving deep into it to uncover all sorts of secrets that have been hidden in plain sight for centuries.
All right. I'm ready to become a landscape detective.
Me too.
Yeah.
But before we start digging into the specifics,
right?
We need to understand something really important about the Frisian landscape.
What's that?
It's not just some random collection of hills and valleys.
Okay.
It's what we call a cultural landscape.
Oh, I've heard that term before.
Yeah. So what does that mean? Basically, it means that the landscape has been shaped over thousands of years by human activity.
Oh, wow. So like every ditch, every boundary, every little hill or valley is a result of people interacting with the land.
Precisely. So it's like walking through a museum.
Okay.
But instead of paintings and sculptures,
right,
we have fields and villages.
That's a cool way to think about it.
Yeah. And just like a museum curator
uh-huh.
can tell us about the artist's technique or the historical context of a painting, we can look at the Frisian landscape and see the fingerprints of past generations.
I like that analogy.
So even though these activities happened centuries ago,
right,
their traces are still visible today.
That's amazing.
Isn't it? The way the land is divided, the patterns of the fields and villages, those are echoes of the past that we can still see and learn from.
So let's get to it. Tell me about these patterns.
Okay, so the article talks about two main patterns of land division in Friesland.
Okay.
In the north and west, there are these irregular polygons.
Polygons, so like lots of different shapes all smushed together.
Yeah, almost like a giant patchwork quilt.
Hmm. Okay. I can kind of picture that.
Each piece is unique and they all fit together in this kind of jumbled way.
Okay, so that's the north and west. What about the rest of Friesland?
Well, that's where things get really interesting.
Okay.
Because when you move to the center, south and east, you find these long strip-like parcels of land.
So instead of a patchwork quilt, it's more like a bunch of stripes all lined up next to each other.
Exactly. Yeah. It's almost like someone took a ruler and drew these perfectly straight lines across the landscape.
That's a pretty stark difference.
It is. And it reflects the different ways that people use the land in these different regions.
So what's the story there? Why are the patterns so different?
Well, a lot of it has to do with the challenges and opportunities presented by the environment.
Makes sense. I mean, we're talking about a region that's been shaped by the sea, by the coast, and by all those marshes.
Right. So early settlers had to adapt to these conditions. And that's reflected in the way they divided up the land.
Okay, so let's break it down region by region.
Perfect. Let's start with the coast.
Sounds good to me.
Which was settled first around 2,500 years ago.
2,500 years ago. Wow, that's a long time.
I know, right?
Mm.
And I can't even imagine trying to farm or build a life in that kind of environment.
Why not? What was so challenging about it?
Well, think about it. You're right on the edge of the sea.
Yeah.
The land is constantly being eroded by the waves.
Oh, I see what you mean. That would be a constant threat.
Yeah. So how did they adapt? Did they just keep moving inland?
Well, they did something even more impressive than that. They built terps.
Terps? What are those?
They're these artificial dwelling hills.
So like little mounds of earth.
Yeah, essentially. They would pile up earth to create these mounds and then build their houses and communities on top of them.
Wow. So it's like they created their own little islands of safety amidst this constantly changing landscape.
Exactly. It was a brilliant way to protect themselves from floods and high tides.
That's pretty ingenious.
And because each terp community had to organize their land around these dwelling hills, it created that jumbled patchwork pattern we see in the coastal region.
So it's a direct result of each community adapting to their immediate surroundings.
You got it. They had to work with whatever small pieces of land they could protect and elevate.
And that's what created that patchwork pattern we see on the map today.
Precisely. Now the story shifts as we move inland.
Okay, I'm ready for the next chapter.
All right, well, those long strip patterns you mentioned.
Yeah, the ones that look like someone drew straight lines across the landscape.
Exactly. That's where the story of medieval land reclamation comes in.
Oh, so this is a whole different era.
Yes. Around the end of the first millennium, there was a major shift in land use.
What happened?
Well, people started moving away from the vulnerable coastal region.
Okay.
And into the peat marshes.
Wait, peat marshes. Those are basically giant swamps, right?
You got it.
Why would anyone want to move there?
Yeah.
Doesn't sound very hospitable.
You're right. It wasn't ideal. But remember, this is a time of population growth.
Okay.
There's an increasing demand for land. People need more space to live and grow food.
So they had to get creative.
Exactly. They realized that if they could transform these vast unusable swamps into fertile farmland, they could solve their space problem. And that's exactly what they set out to do.
So they drained the swamps and turned them into fields.
Yeah, but they didn't just randomly start digging ditches and planting crops.
Okay.
They did it systematically. They had a plan.
So what was the plan?
Well, they started by allocating strips of land to villagers.
So like each villager got a long, narrow strip of land.
Yeah, and that's what led to that characteristic strip pattern we see today.
Hold on. So they basically took this wild, unmanageable landscape and imposed order on it.
Precisely. It's pretty incredible when you think about it.
I'm picturing these long rows of crops stretching as far as the eye can see, all perfectly organized in these neat strips.
And along those strips emerged ribbon-shaped villages, their layout dictated by the direction of land reclamation.
So they were planning not just the farmland itself,
right,
but also where people would live.
Exactly. It was a really comprehensive approach to land use.
And all of this is reflected in the patterns we see on the map today.
It is. And here's where it gets even more interesting.
Oh, there's more.
Yeah. Some of these villages actually shifted over time.
Shifted? What do you mean?
Like they physically moved.
You mean like they packed up their houses and moved to a new location? Why would they do that?
Well, there are a few reasons. Sometimes it was because of soil fertility.
Okay, so they might move to a place with better soil for growing crops.
Exactly. Or they might move because of drainage issues.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, if your village is constantly flooding,
yeah,
you're going to want to find a drier spot.
And sometimes they move because of access to resources.
So, like if they needed to be closer to a river for transportation or trade?
Precisely. So, you see, this landscape is more than just a static picture.
Right.
It's a record of constant change and adaptation.
It's like each generation added their own chapter to the story.
Exactly. And as we delve deeper, we'll uncover even more about the past.
Well, I'm definitely hooked now. Let's keep going.
All right, let's do it.
What else can these lines and patterns tell us about the people who created them?
Oh, there's so much more to explore, but first we need to take a little detour.
A detour. Where are we going?
We're going to talk about the challenges facing these incredible landscape features today.
Oh, okay. So it's not just about the past.
Right.
It's also about the present and the future.
Exactly. And about how we can protect these fragile remnants of history in a world that's constantly changing.
Okay. Well, I'm ready for the challenge. So let's go.
Let's do it. So those amazing lines and patterns we've been talking about, those long stretches and intricate designs.
Yeah, the ones that tell us so much about the people who came before us.
Right. They're actually facing a new challenge these days.
Oh, what's that?
Modern development.
You mean like new houses and roads and stuff?
Exactly. As populations grow, we need more space for people to live and work.
But that means we might be losing those historical treasures, right? Those lines and patterns that have been there for centuries.
That's the risk. And it's kind of like their voices are being drowned out, you know? All those stories they could tell.
It's a tough balance, isn't it? Trying to meet the needs of today while still preserving the past.
It is, and there are no easy answers.
I mean, I get that we need new housing and roads and businesses.
Of course.
But if we erase all those historical elements from the landscape, we lose something irreplaceable.
We do. It's like losing a part of ourselves.
It's like before we started this deep dive, I just saw fields and ditches, you know. But now I can't help but wonder about the stories they hold.
It's like suddenly being able to read a secret language written into the land itself.
So the more we learn about these features, the more likely we are to protect them, right?
Exactly. It's all about awareness.
Okay, so let's talk about some of those long lines. Specifically, the article mentioned the Oosterwimmerts.
Ah, yes. The Oosterwimmerts. That's a remarkable one.
What's so special about it?
Well, for starters, it's 17 kilometers long.
17 kilometers. That's like the length of a small city.
I know. It's basically a perfectly straight waterway that served as a boundary between different areas of land reclamation back in the Middle Ages.
Wow. Just picturing someone standing at one end and looking all the way to the other end.
It must have been quite a sight.
And it wasn't just about marking territory, right?
Hmm. No, these lines often had practical purposes, too.
Like what?
Well, in the case of the Oosterwimmerts, it helped to control the flow of water through the reclaimed land.
So it was actually a functional part of the landscape.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's been working for centuries.
Are there any other lines like that?
Absolutely. The article also mentions the Westerwimmerts, which is a bit shorter at 6.5 kilometers,
okay,
but still incredibly impressive. Then there's the Monarchy Greppel at 8.3 kilometers and the Hamir at 7 kilometers.
Wow. So many long lines, and each one with its own story to tell.
Right. And what's really cool is that you can actually see these lines on Google Earth.
Really? I can just zoom in on Friesland and see them.
You got it. Just look for those long straight lines. They're pretty easy to spot once you know what you're looking for.
I'm going to have to try that later. It's like holding a piece of history in your hand.
It is. And it reminds us that the past isn't really gone. It's all around us if we know where to look.
But you said earlier that those lines are fragile?
I did.
What did you mean by that?
Well, sadly, some of them are already disappearing.
Oh, no. Why is that happening?
Modern development, like we talked about earlier,
yeah,
it can be a real threat. Sometimes those lines get plowed over to make way for new fields.
Oh, I see.
Or they get built over for housing developments or roads.
And those incredible features, those links to the past, they could just be wiped away.
It's a real danger. And that's why it's so important for people to understand the history and significance of these lines.
Because if we don't know what we're losing, we can't protect it.
Exactly. It's about seeing those lines and patterns, not just as random features on the landscape.
Right, but as pieces of history, as stories waiting to be told.
And once you see them that way, it changes your whole perspective.
It's like those optical illusions where you see one thing and then suddenly you see something completely different.
And that shift in perspective can be powerful.
So it's not about stopping progress.
No, not at all.
It's about finding ways to make progress that respects the past.
Finding a balance between the needs of today and the legacy of yesterday.
I love that idea.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a conversation that needs to happen at all levels, right?
It does. From individual landowners to government agencies to developers and architects.
We all have a role to play in protecting those stories written into the land.
Okay, so we've talked about these lines as boundaries, as historical markers. But what if they could actually talk?
Oh, wow. What a great question. What stories would they tell us about the people who shaped this land?
They'd tell us about backbreaking work, you know, hours spent digging and hauling and shaping the land.
All to create something that would last for centuries.
Yeah. And not just for themselves, but for future generations, too.
It's a legacy, isn't it? A way of saying we were here.
It is. And it makes you realize that we're all part of this long chain, you know? Connected to the people who came before us and the people who will come after us.
And the landscape is the thread that binds us all together.
Exactly. It's a reminder that we're not just individuals. We're part of something much bigger than ourselves.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into the Frisian landscape,
yeah,
I want to leave our listeners with a challenge.
Ooh, I like challenges.
Okay, so next time you're looking at a map, or even better, you're actually out in the world.
Yeah.
Take a moment to really see the landscape.
Like, don't just see fields and trees and houses.
Right. Look for the patterns, the lines, the subtle hints of the past.
It's like becoming a landscape detective in your own backyard.
Exactly. You might be surprised by what you discover.
And who knows, you might even uncover a secret message from the past.
So to all our listeners out there, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep diving deep into the hidden stories that surround us.
Because the landscape is more than just scenery.
It's a living testament to human ingenuity, resilience, and creativity.
And on that note,
we'll wrap up this deep dive.
Thanks for joining us.
And we'll see you next time.
Until then, happy exploring.